Welcome to Pacific Grace MB Church. This morning, we have a few announcements before we dismiss the kids for Kids Church. So if you just open up your bulletins, we can just go through them rather quickly. First up, if you look under the church news, we extended the offering cutoff day. It says, due to last week's snowstorm, the offering cutoff day for 2008 has been extended to this Sunday. So if you still like to do an offering for 2008, today is the last year that you can do that. And if you do that in your offering envelope, please do indicate that it's for 2008. The 2008 offering report is ready in the foyer, and the tax receipts for 2008 will be prepared in February. Also, for all ministry leaders and volunteers, if you have any reimbursement vouchers that need to be submitted, today is also the last day to do that. And so do fill them out and put them in the slot for Alex Lien, who's our church accountant. Also, we want to bring attention to a few other things that's coming up. At the end of this month, we have Missions Fest 2009. It's from January 30th to February 1st. And it's going to be held again at the Vancouver Convention Exhibition Center. The church is providing transportation to Missions Fest. And so there's a sign-up sheet in the church bulletin board downstairs as well. If you're able to make it, please do sign up and be at the church here by 6:30, as the bus will be leaving for us to be there by 7. So that's happening on Missions Fest at the end of the month. Also, I just wanted to put a plug in as well. We're needing some volunteers. We have some ministry areas of need. It says here in under caring and community. You know, looking for a place to serve, desiring to grow in your faith and leadership, eager to use your talents to serve God. We're seeking faithful volunteers in the following ministry areas: worship teams, audiovisual team, Sunday school for children, youth, and adults, and hospitality. Please do speak to me after the service if you're interested in serving any of these areas. At this time, we'd like to dismiss the children for Kids Church. So, I want to start my message by saying, you know, how was everyone's Christmas and New Year's? Yeah, it was good. I've talked to different people, and they're kind of bummed out because of all the snow that we couldn't get out very much, and most of you guys were homebound. Well, you know, I think that's a good time to be at home with family, right? You know, you take that time to just hang out. And I think most of you know that this last Christmas and New Year's, my family went home to Ontario for Christmas. And I tell you right now, it was a zoo, okay? If you just can't imagine, we had 10 adults. We had 6 children under the age of 5, trapped in this little house that's about maybe 2,500 square feet for 10 days. What do you think will happen? Anyways, it was a lot of fun, and it was good to be with family. And you know, I thought we got bad snow out there. Jeez, I think we got more bad snow out here, because we had about 3 to 5 feet of snow in Ontario. But I think we got a lot here as well. But anyway, if you could just imagine with me what kind of day it must have been on Christmas Day. You know, there's wrapping paper flying everywhere, and it was just nuts just to be there. And one of the things I do enjoy about being home for Christmas is, you know, my in-laws. I love my in-laws. And they always have this knack for giving at least one unusual gift, one ordinary gift, extraordinary gift for Christmas. And I think you guys know what I'm talking about, right? I think we all have, in one time in our lives or whatever, received a unusual gift, whether for Christmas or for some other occasion. Well, this is what I received for Christmas this year as my unusual gift. Can you guys see it? I wish I had a picture of it. I should have put a picture up. Okay. Basically, this is a hex bug. Do you guys know what a hex bug is? Yes? No? Okay. Well, this is an interesting toy, actually. The first time I saw this, it was actually on the Discovery Channel. And the guy was, you know, talking about how, yeah, this is one of the latest toys for 2008. Everyone was getting it. And the neat thing about it, it's basically a little mini robot that moves around by the antenna and responds to touch and sound. And, you know, when I saw this on the television, I thought, no way. You know, it can't really do that. Like, someone's got to be, you know, remote controlling this thing, right? And you know what? When we did receive it on that Christmas day, and we tried it out, next thing you know, it becomes the hit of the Christmas day. All the guys received one of this, right? And we started having death matches with our Hexbox. So, I mean, that was quite the entertainment value, I tell you right now, for putting our little gladiator type, you know, let's see if my hex buck can take out yours, you know. So, anyways. But, you know, as I was reflecting on that whole experience, you know, I brought home the idea that as people, you know, we don't always believe what we see or what we hear straight away. And I think we use some words such as gullible as a description of people who will easily accept what they are told. I mean, I hate to admit this, you know, but I happen to be one of these people that every time I watch television or whatever, and there's some new gizmo or gadget or whatever that's on television, I say to my wife, gosh, I gotta get that. And she looks at me like, you're so gullible. I'm like, what? It looks cool. I think that really would fit well in my toolbox. And she's like, you don't need that. Okay, fine. So then, you know, if it weren't for my wife, I think my garage would be full of all these as seen on TV gadgets, you know. Anyhow. So, you know, what do we want to do? We want to experience for ourselves before we truly believe what we're told or what we see. And I even go further to say, I think that we come to accept these truths only after we've tested our experience against our preconceived ideas. And I share this thought with you this morning because we're going to be embarking on a new church theme for 2009, which is discipleship. And if you look in your bulletins, you'll notice that in the front there we have this picture and it says being a disciple. And that's our main theme for this year. But before we can even embark on this new theme of discipleship, we need to first resolve in our hearts what we truly believe about Jesus Christ, because being a disciple is to believe in Jesus Christ first. So I'm going to invite you today to do something really radical. And I want to encourage you to set aside your firmly established ideas, your personal views, your preconceptions of who Jesus is, perhaps what you've been told about him, what you know or what you think you know already know about him. And join me this year in rediscovering anew for yourself, perhaps experiencing for the first time Jesus on his terms, who he claimed to be, who his disciples say he was, and then resolve if you will follow him fully. For as 1 John chapter 2 verse 6 says, whoever claims to live in him must walk as Jesus did. Now, the Apostle John states it plainly that the purpose for his gospel, because the book we'll be looking at today is, or for the next 4 months, will actually be the book of John. The Gospel of John. And he says it plainly in this Gospel that it is written for all people, past, present, and future, so that all may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you and we may have life in his name. John chapter 20, verse 31. Now, unlike Matthew's Gospel, because there are four Gospels, right? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Unlike Matthew's gospel, which was written to prove to his Jewish readers that Jesus is the Messiah, or the gospel of Mark, which was written to strengthen the faith of the first century believers in the face of persecution and martyrdom, or Luke's gospel to establish the legitimacy of Gentile believers in God's kingdom, John is saying in his gospel to us, I want you to consider Jesus in his teaching and deeds, recognizing that you will not understand the good news of Jesus in its fullest sense unless you view him from the point of view that Jesus is God manifested in the flesh. And his words and deeds are those of the Son of God, who is both God and man. You know, I believe it's safe to say that most of us here, if not all of us here today, proclaim to have a faith in Jesus Christ. However, I also believe that we may all have different preconceived ideas of who he is now, who he was, who he is before we came to faith. Perhaps some of us may have heard that Jesus is just a myth. It's just a story. That Jesus is just a man, you know, a wise man. Maybe he was just a guru who gave wise teachings. Perhaps Jesus was a rebel, a prophet. And then some of us may have heard that he is the Lord, he is King, he is Son of God. Maybe some of us think that God is safe. Maybe they think of God or Jesus as the Sunday school Jesus that we've been taught about all our lives. You know, as I think about now, when I first came to know about Jesus, it was interesting that in my mind, I pictured Jesus to be this tall, you know, skinny, white, fair-skinned Swedish guy. I mean, haven't we all seen that picture? And in fact, of course, that he's nothing like that. And I think we get these ideas either from where we grew up in church, or maybe we've attended church regularly. Maybe we've got this picture of Jesus in our heads. Maybe we've learned it from school, from the influence of the media. And so we form this picture. We have these preconceived ideas. And then we come to him this way. And this may or may not be accurate, or even meet our expectations of who Jesus is. You know, it would encourage us to know that we are not alone in having preconceived ideas about who Jesus is. Because as we read in John chapter 1, verse 35 to 51, we discover that the first disciples had them too. And so if you have your Bibles with you this morning, I encourage you to turn with me to John chapter 1. And we'll be reading from verse 35 to 51. And if you don't have one, I encourage you to share with someone next to you. Reading from verse 35. The next day, John was there again with two of his disciples. And when he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." And when the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" And they said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." And so they went and saw where he was staying and spent the day with him. It was about the 10th hour. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John had said and who had followed Jesus. And the first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah, that is the Christ." And he brought him to Jesus. And Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas," which when translated is Peter. The next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, "Follow me." And Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." "Nazareth, can anything good come from there?" Nathanael asked. "Come and see," said Philip. And when Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said to him, "Here is a true Israelite in whom there is nothing false." "How do you know me?" Nathanael asked. Jesus answered, "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you." And Nathanael declared, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." And Jesus said, "You believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. You shall see greater things than that." He then added, "I tell you the truth. You shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." May the Lord bless the reading of His Word. You know, to put these events in context, to put these verses in context, I do encourage you to read chapter 1 on your own this week. And in fact, like I said before, to begin our our theme of discipleship, a series of messages on discipleship. We're going to be looking at the book of John basically from now till about mid-April. And so we're going to be covering each chapter by chapter. But each sermon that we're going to be having, we're going to try to focus on Jesus' interactions with his disciples. Because we're going to be looking at these verses from a discipleship point of view. But just to give you a bit of a background here, so that you can fully understand the events, we start at verse 1. Basically, verse 1 through 18 form the prologue. If you look at chapter 1, verse 1 through 18 forms the prologue, which, unlike the other Gospels, if you look at them, do not start with Jesus' birth, but instead establishes his divine and human nature with God the Father at creation. Essentially, John is giving us here the pre-birth story. John then paints us a picture of who Jesus is by describing him as the Word. The Greek word here is logos, which means speaking, a message, or words. Drawing the reader back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 3, when God spoke at creation to form the world. You see, by addressing Jesus as the spoken word, John has established that Jesus is eternal. Jesus is in relationship with God, the Father, and Jesus is God. John also describes Jesus as the light. Okay, we're talking here a general, we're not talking here about a general light like the sun, but rather we're talking about Jesus as the light that shines on each person, either in salvation or in illuminating him with regard to his sin and coming judgment. In other words, Jesus is the revealed truth to whom we choose to believe in or not, but he also reveals the truth about us and our human nature. And Jesus knows about our human nature because he was also a man. He was the Word who became flesh. That he did not appear to be a man, but took on himself humanity, and thereby knows our need for divine grace. As the Apostle Paul writes in the book of Romans, we are saved by grace alone, because God, Jesus, knows how we need it. It continues on in verses 19 to 34, where we read the account of Jesus' cousin, John the Baptist, who is sent to witness or testify about the coming Christ. And he does so twice. First, by denying that he is the Christ to the Pharisees, alluding to the Old Testament prophecies and identifying his role as the one who prepares the way, as Isaiah chapter 40, verse 3 states. And secondly, when proclaiming to his disciples that Jesus is the Lamb, he's identifying him as the ultimate sacrifice for humanity's sin, Isaiah chapter 53, verse 7 to 12. And then finally, in verses 35 to 51, which is what we just read, we learn that it was John the Baptist who pointed out Jesus to his disciples, essentially Andrew, and there's an unnamed disciple, but scholars believe it is the Apostle John, the one who wrote the Gospel of John, who promptly left the Baptist to follow Jesus, both literally and spiritually. And interestingly, if you look at this conversation, they asked him where he was staying, and he invited them to see for themselves. You know, perhaps you'll agree with me that this is an odd conversation between Jesus and John's disciples. You know, however, one commentary explains it this way, that this exchange was more than just asking Jesus for his address. Because as it says here, he says, "What do you want?" And they reply, "Where are you staying?" And he says, "Come and you will see." Rather, what the text is trying to communicate to us, that this is really the disciples seeking or desiring fellowship with Jesus. You see, they were just not satisfied with a belief built on hearsay. Because John the Baptist had told them about Jesus. They wanted to find him out for themselves, and to discover whether the testimony of Jesus, the testimony of John, could be true. And so what ends up happening is they end up spending the day with him. And by the end of that day, can you just imagine spending a whole day with Jesus, just talking with him, fellowshipping with him, you know, getting to know him, having that heart-to-heart connection. Andrew became a true believer, and he proclaims Jesus as the Messiah. And what does he do? The first thing he does is he goes and finds his brother Simon to tell him about his encounter with Jesus, the Messiah. And upon meeting Simon, Jesus renames him Peter in anticipation of the rock and the leader he would be. The next day, Jesus leaves for Galilee and recruits Philip. As it turns out, he, Andrew, and Peter are from the same town of Bethsaida. And Philip goes off and finds Nathanael and tells him about Jesus, who's skeptical about who Jesus is. They go to Jesus together, and Nathanael is amazed by his power and believes, to which Jesus tells him he will witness more amazing things. You know, again, one commentary explains this course of events. See, the episode of Philip and Nathanael parallel the account of Andrew and Peter, to the extent that Philip, like Andrew, brought another to Christ by his testimony. But there's also a major difference. In the first account, Andrew sought out Jesus. But in the second, Jesus sought out Philip. Furthermore, Peter responded silently but willingly to Andrew's testimony, while Nathanael responded to Philip's announcement skeptically and even rudely. See, these accounts of Jesus' first disciples reveal that Jesus refuses to be limited by their expectations and preconceived ideas about him. He desires that his disciples know him intimately, whether they come to seek him or he goes to seek them, to have an encounter that will change their lives, to change the way they view things, to transform their attitude so much so that they are excited to tell others about who he is. You know, that's the thing. If you have encountered the true living God, the true living Jesus, you can't help but have this inner desire, this excitement to go and tell others about him. And it brings me to this question. You know, what kind of faith do we seek? What do we want when we go to Jesus? What is it that we seek from him? You know, I'm sure you've heard of others of faith where, you know, they're so in tune with God and they're so alive for God, you know, and you wonder why I don't have that kind of faith. And it comes to the question, what do you believe? Who do you believe Jesus is? You know, is our faith one where we consider Jesus to be a safe God? That we're happy living our lives where we know that our own personal salvation is assured, and we just do the church thing or we do the Sunday thing, but nothing more. You know, Jesus is saying to us that he wants to have an encounter with you, a real encounter with you. He wants to know you and for you to know him intimately. And the question is, will we? You know, going back to my earlier story about the hex bug, you know, when my brothers-in-law and I opened up our gifts, it turned out I was the only one who knew what these were. And it was by the strength of my testimony that we even gave these toys a chance. Because I can tell you right now, when we opened up the boxes, we really weren't sure what to make of this thing. And, you know, in the same vein, I think we continue to struggle today with what to do with God's sacrificial gift of his Son. We've just come from celebrating Christmas, the gift of Jesus. You know, as Pastor Lawrence shared at the Christmas evening service, it's the gift that nobody wanted. You know, it's fine if Jesus was just a wise man, as I said before, or a really good teacher of morals and ethics, or even a miracle healer. But what do we do with John's testimony of Jesus as the Son of God, or Lamb of God, or Messiah? What do we do with that? How do we respond to that? Now, I'd like to digress from this question for a minute. You know, as I said before, we've just come off a busy Christmas shopping season. And did you know that there are actually 5 different kinds of buyers, and that businesses know which kind of buyer you are, and they will market their products to you accordingly? I'm going to give you some examples and see if you can identify yourself in these categories. In the first category, we have the innovators. These are the people who will try anything new. And I'm sure you know who they are. They're the ones who must have the latest iPod 3G or they must have the new, what's the newest cell phone? I don't know what the newest cell phone is, the Samsung or the LG or whatever it is. So these are your innovators. These are the ones that want to try anything new. The next group are the early adopters. These are the guys, what they do is, they will do tons and tons of market research before they will make a buying decision. These are the guys who will spend hours on the internet looking at, at peer reviews and critics and things like that before they'll make their purchase. And then there are the folks like us. There are the early majority and the later majority, where basically we are the people who take the wait-and-see approach. We wait to see how reliable the product is. We wait maybe perhaps a year to see if the product actually lives up to its name. We see if the company that produced the product will actually be around so that they can provide us with customer support. And more importantly, we're also the ones who wait for the prices to drop before we purchase anything. I remember this Christmas, I was really hoping to get I was trying to subtly hint to my wife, I would like to buy a 32-inch LCD for Christmas. Because I said, oh, look at that, Best Buy's got it for $479. And she's like, yeah, so? I said, 5 years ago, that was like $1,200 or whatever it was. And she's like, yeah, so? I was like, okay, fine. So I didn't get an LCD TV for Christmas. Anyhow. And then the last group is, of course, we have the excessive traditionalists, where these are the people who purchase when they have no other choice, when the product has become obsolete. And I share this information about business practices with you because sometimes I think we approach Jesus and the gospel in this way. You know, we have disciples, we have Christian believers who jump on the latest religious trends, books and music. These are the guys who... people who go out and they read the latest new book on how to encourage your faith or grow in your faith or some new church trend that we need to try this and we need to do that to grow our church. You know, we have others who will take the, if it works for you, it should work for me approach. You know, again, you know, if you read some book and you see that your life has changed and then you pass it on to someone else and they go, oh yeah, I tried this, you should try it too. Maybe it'll work for you. Even more, we'll take the wait-and-see approach. They want to see how our lives have changed. They want to see if God really is who we say He is and how He's transforming our lives. You know, and there'll be others who will wait to the very end before taking the gospel and Jesus seriously in their lives. You know, we see in the first disciples that when faced with the question of what to do about Jesus, after John the Baptist's testimony that He is the Son of God, the Lamb of God, and the Messiah, Andrew and John were the first to believe. Simon became an early adopter, and so did Philip. But Nathaniel needed more research. He needed more proof before we believe. Now, lest we understand that the motivations of these first believers, these first disciples along modern-day business principles, we need to recognize that their belief, their journey, their walk as Christ's disciples began first with an encounter with Jesus that dispelled their objections. You know, Jesus will later say to them in Matthew chapter 5, verse 17 to 19, which I wish to read here. It says, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not the latest, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen, will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Anyone who breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven." You know, these are harsh words. This passage here would have shaken the disciples' world. That He would have broken their objections. He would have broken down their objections, their preconceived ideas of who they thought Jesus was. But you know, think about this for a minute. Would they have followed Jesus if they did not have a real encounter or a real relationship with Him first? You know, I don't stand here before you today to try and prove to you who Jesus is. But I do want to extend an invitation to you to encounter Jesus today. And it doesn't matter if you're a new believer, if you're seeking, if you've been a long-time believer, or even a skeptic. I encourage you today to come and see Jesus anew. Come with an open heart to seek, to listen, to trust, and you will see who Jesus really is. And I warn you, be ready to have your preconceptions, challenged. As I said at the very beginning, being a disciple begins with believing in Jesus Christ first. Who do you believe? As we move on in our service by the taking of the communion, I really encourage you this morning to kind of reflect, take a moment, pray, and ask yourself, what do you believe? Who do you really believe? As we embark on this new theme of discipleship this year, I want to encourage everyone to take up a discipleship plan, perhaps. Seek to grow in your faith this year. And I hope this year will be a foundational year in your spiritual formation, in your spiritual growth. But we can't do that if we don't take a moment, if we don't take the time to really stop and ask ourselves, who do we believe? What do we believe about Jesus and about our faith? So this morning, as I said, we're going to be continuing on with our communion. And so I'd like to invite the deacons to come forward. And